Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Thank you for listening to What's Next. I'm executive producer Charles Gilbert. As communities across Western New York prepare to celebrate Juneteenth, conversations about history, civic engagement, and community action are taking center stage. What's Next contributor Saladina Law speaks with Charlene Rivera, public programs coordinator at the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center, and Dinesha Scott Warren, corporate lawyer and executive director of the Niagara Organizing Alliance for Hope. Together, they share personal experiences that shape their journey into public service and advocacy, discuss the significance of Juneteenth and the events planned throughout the region, and explore ways residents can become more engaged in their communities. From voter participation to grassroots organizing, they offer insight into how individuals can make meaningful impact where they live.
This is Saladina Law for Buffalo, Toronto Public Media. Today, we're going to be talking to a couple of special guests and to get into some of their background as well as some of the activities that they're going to be planning soon as it relates to Juneteenth. We have with us Charlene Rivera. She is one of my team members at the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center. We affectionately know her as Char. And then we also have Dinesha Scott Warren, who is a corporate lawyer. And we wanted to just get a little bit more insight into what you actually do. So starting with Char, born and raised in Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah.
Raised. Probably one of the biggest Bad Bunny fans that I know. Char, you know, she has a real passion for history and social justice, and she graduated with a BS in criminology with a minor in sociology from Niagara University, and she's our public programs coordinator. And she says that her goal is to create fun, community-centered events as the public programs coordinator. And the reason I wanted to have you on the show is because a lot of times people don't get an opportunity to see all of the background work that you do. I mean, you've helped coordinate and plan a bridal show during Black History Month, all the way to a silent disco. You even give me advice about relationships that I never asked for, right? But you do a lot, and I wanted to kind of get some insight into like what really motivates you, because I don't think I ever asked you that. Like, why do you do this type of work?
Honestly, I do it for the community. Mm-hmm. Like, being in Puerto Rico, I got to see a lot of things that a child shouldn't have to go through or see. Right. My mom came to America with two kids and $200 in her pockets.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. She did not speak English. Nobody spoke English. We just came here for an opportunity. And just seeing the struggle she went through, seeing what she had to deal with as a single mom. But what sustained her was the community she had around her. Even if she didn't appreciate it or see it at the moment, I was able to see it and appreciate it for what it was. And I want to see some type of change in this world. I want more people to not have to go through what my mom had to go through, what I had to go through, not speaking English in America, not being from here, right? Even having a heavy accent when I first started learning English. So just the sense of community is what drives me.
Mm, okay. And Dinesha, you being having a background in like corporate law, I think about Char's background with criminology, and there seems to be this synergy or this connection in terms of this advocacy for social justice.
Yes.
Now, you grew up here right in Buffalo, correct?
Yes, yes. I'm a 14215 girl. Grew up on Shuley Street.
What? Okay.
Can't take it out of me.
Okay. So what was your background like and your experience and how it led you to get involved in like corporate law?
Yes. I grew up, I had two parents that really put education first. Mm. My dad worked at Bethlehem Steel, and, you know, he did pass away from mesothelioma years, you know, later. And it was really hard because I know that because of how hard he worked and what he went through, it was the reason I am where I am today. My brother's a judge here, a workers' compensation administrative law judge. My sister was a banker. So our parents really just truly advocated for our education. I remember when I was 16 and all my friends were getting cars and I kept thinking, why can't I get a car? And I remember my parents saying, eventually the car is going to end up at a junkyard. All these kids' cars at 16, but mm-hmm. no one will ever be able to take your education away from you.
Wow.
And it was absolutely true. You know, I think I'm in spaces now because I have the Esquire behind my name, because my parents were in retirement and came out of retirement to be able to pay for me to go to law school. Because when you're in law school, you don't have time to be working like, you know, part-time jobs. I have worked 40 hours a week through, get myself through Canisius College with my parents' help. And I've worked full-time when I was in high school, in private high school to help. But when I got to law school, I was like dependent like a preschooler on my parents. And here they were, you know, older when they had me and my brother. So, but they came out of retirement to pay for our rent in our apartment in Ohio, University of Toledo Law School. And my brother, who had gone through high school in 3 years and college in 3 years, because he was pre-med and pre-law. And so now we both were in law school, and here my retirement parents are paying for two kids to get through law school. And that was just, it was, I'm just, I will always be grateful for what they did, because I just know I wouldn't have it the way I do.
Yeah. I mean, just thinking about like the sacrifices that your family made, Shara, your mom made as well, and both of you not squandering that opportunity, because I think sometimes we may see people and they may not be aware of the kind of sacrifices that, you know, their family actually made for them to be where they are right now. So
if you were Mary Scott's daughter, you weren't going to squander it. Okay.
Yeah.
My dad was more easygoing, but my mom, I mean, no, I was not. No.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to what I was mentioning in regards to like the synergy or the connection with both of your backgrounds and community and advocating for social justice, what have you seen that has been some of the biggest challenges to you in the work that you do? Starting with you, Shar.
Honestly, just support of the cause. I feel like ever since, you know, we've had certain person and presidency, whatever y'all want to call it, a lot of people have become very scared to just even advocate for the simplest things. We see it in the way when we mention DEI, everybody starts panicking, looking around like, where's the camera? When we talk about, for example, events that we have going on, we reach out to people to sponsor. They see that it's a Black History Museum. They see that we are talking about Black history, Black culture, and diversity. And they're like, yeah, no, we don't want to get in trouble. So it's okay. So I think those are like the biggest challenges I'm facing right now.
Wow. Can you relate to that too in terms of
I would think so, because people have like the wrong ideas about DEI that, you know, they're hearing things that make them think, if a Black person is in a position, they're automatically assuming that they were placed in that position because of the color of their skin, not their abilities and their credentials. I mean, I get asked that question all the time. It's like, oh, did you become a corporate attorney because you were Black?
What?
Yes, I get asked that question. And I said, that would be the last thing in the world I'd be accused of being Black, is to land being a corporate attorney.
Wow.
So people make assumptions.
Wow.
You know, yes. Yeah.
And I think too, like with your corporate consulting business, you focus more specifically and work with non-for-profits.
Yes.
So I would also think that you constantly come in confrontation with that kind of mentality, because oftentimes non-for-profits are not being supported the
Correct.
Way that they should.
Exactly. And then especially, you know, it's hard with funding. A lot of grant funding has been cut for not-for-profits. And then with consulting with them, helping them learn to diversify their funding streams too. So rather than going at things maybe one direction, is having to reshape the narrative in order to provide some of the programming that you were doing before.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And do both of you see some of those challenges? Also, the fact that you're women and people may look at you like, well, you're not as qualified because you're a woman and you might be in predominantly male-centered spaces?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. Yes.
I've pretty much spent my career in male-centered spaces in corporate law. And it's uncomfortable as people may be to have me in that setting. Then when they see why you're there, I've sat across from people that just there's no way they want me sitting at that table with them. But what I'm bringing to the table, they need. So scooch over.
Yeah. Shar, just recently, the National Travel and Tourism Week that's been celebrated across this country, Destination Niagara, they recognized you as a Tourism Employee Spotlight Award. And, you know, that's definitely something I think that was a beautiful way to celebrate who you are and the work that you do. How did it make you feel? Because you weren't expecting that acknowledgement at all.
I still remember I needed to take a call and I was going to go to the front and Josh was like, no, go to the back. I did not question it. I just went to the back. And in the middle of the phone call, I'm like, wait, why did I just listen to him, you know? And going to the front and seeing everybody, I felt appreciated, mm-hmm. you know, and reassured. Because yeah. sometimes I could get in my head a lot when things don't go the way that I want it to go, when I'm struggling. So it was nice to have the reassurance that I'm doing things right, that I'm creating some type of change. And that's always been my goal. Like, I pursued criminal justice because I wanted to create the change. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, I realized that maybe not that way. So being able to be a part of the change, be a part of educating people, the youth specifically, is really rewarding. Mm-hmm. And it was really rewarding to be recognized for it.
Good. Yeah. Dinesha, I wanted to talk a little bit about you serving as a executive director and general counsel, as well as a human resource manager. In those specific roles, what would you say would have been something that you've learned that is not book knowledge? Because I think a lot of times, you know, we go to school, we learn things, and some things may be theoretical. You know, they apply in some situations, but there's certain things that you only learn through lived experience. Serving in some of those capacities, what's some of the insights that you gain from just your lived experience?
I think being able to get people that have maybe polarizing political views and getting them to be a part of your organization.
Hmm.
To be able to have a Democrat and a Republican or an independent all be members like of Niagara Organizing Alliance for Hope. And that's what we have.
Okay.
So finding some commonality, some basic humanity in which they share, they may disagree, but they agree enough to sit around the table to say, we believe in this organization enough to be members and to support it.
Okay.
So, and that I think was just definitely not book knowledge.
Yeah. So you mentioned Niagara Organizing Alliance, and that's acronym for NOAA.
NOAA, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Social Justice and Advocacy Organization, where I'm executive director right now.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then what are some of the initiatives that you do?
Yeah. So we do advocacy work like voter registration, because it's regardless of who you're pulling that lever for, it's really important that you're actually registered to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot complain about things if you're not taking a part in the process.
Yeah, you just go on Facebook and do it.
Right.
We love the Facebook warriors.
So we really encourage people. We try to encourage those that are like 16 now to pre-register. So that way, when you become 18, you can say, oh, I meant to do it. It's already there, regardless of your political views, because, you know, we're bipartisan. So we're not trying to tell people who to vote for. We're just saying have a voice. And with your registration, we do a lot with the youth and the women and men's empowerment, where we're helping people with workforce development. We run resume writing workshops, networking events, interviewing skills. These because sometimes people are either trying to advance in their position, or maybe you have a situation where they're re-entering the workforce for whatever reason. It could have been a layoff. It could have been, I've been home raising children and now I'm getting back in and I need these additional skills, you know, that wasn't around when I was spending time, you know, taking care of my family, which is one of the most important jobs in the world too. Yeah. So we're trying to be there for adults on that end to help them. And then as far as the youth, we're in the high schools working with them. I was yesterday, 101, met with like 15 students that are thinking about college to help them understand how one of the ways you want equity is let's get your advanced degree, you know? And, you know, some of the students were like, well, I don't know if I really need it. And I said, but if you're looking for better, just having those credentials behind your name is going to mean enough to somebody else to actually pay you more in your salary for what it doesn't necessarily mean you know more. It's just that somehow you're going to be verified and it's going to credential you to be able to have and open doors for you that wouldn't otherwise be there.
Yeah. Plus, too, it signals a different level of commitment.
Yes.
You know, and consistency.
Yes.
Right.
So working with the youth to try to help them become college and career ready.
And Shar, as a public programs coordinator, you also focus a lot of programming with youth, primarily on the primary school level. We've also done stuff with middle school level as well as high school. What's some of the programs that you've been able to create for some of the students that you've also been able to work with?
Some, because it's been a lot.
Yeah.
We did vision boards with them, especially with the younger audience, just to remind them that you should have goals too. You're never too little, too young to dream and to want to achieve your goals, which that was really fulfilling within itself, because later in the year, we went back to the same school and kids were like, yes, I made it to the soccer team.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
I was a cheerleader.
And
so,
they put that on their vision board.
And they put it on their vision board. So the countless hours of me cutting and trimming pictures was actually worth it. We just actually in March, yes, March 15th is Jackie Robinson Day. So we went to the schools and did Jackie Robinson paper toys, basically trying to teach them, you know, that everybody wasn't always kind and the importance of being kind, the importance of not pointing out each other's differences, but embracing them. I think that's very, very important, especially with the climate that we have nowadays. We did Juneteenth keychains and necklaces and bracelets. I've done it all. Just in Black History Month, we did a trivia game with a bunch of seventh, first, second, third, fourth, around that grade. They really enjoyed it. It was about our content. But before we provided them with that trivia game, they came to our museum to get a tour. So seeing our faces again and like actually knowing the content was a lot of fun for them.
Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, I taught in the school district for some time, and I think oftentimes outsiders may place a lot of unreasonable expectations on teachers because they usually have their curriculum planned out before the entire year starts. And a lot of times it may not be a lot of room to be able to add on additional content or to focus on different things outside of what they're already doing. So the fact that you're being able to go into the schools and to add on to what teachers may not have the expertise or the time to be able to do, I'm sure that they appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think other organizations should be doing it, because I do think the expectations on these teachers are really, really unrealistic. We're talking about people who are underpaid with a new generation of students that, how can I wear this, are not like back in the day, right? So I think organizations like ours need to put their foot out in the community and do things like this.
Yeah. And you know what? I think too about representation. You know, a lot of times you may have a student body that does not look like the staff or the administrators. And because of that, you may have a lack of cultural competence and just lived experience in order to deal with certain children that may come from a different community than yours, you know? And again, that unreasonable expectation that sometimes people may have on teachers, they may have never had experience dealing with some children before in their entire life. And that is an opportunity, I think, as you mentioned, for us to step up and to be able to engage our local school districts and to share from our own lived experience things that we can help to enhance the quality of life of of our students.
That's important. Mm-hmm. Noah also does racial healing circles. Okay. And we go into the school districts and do them with the students. Because sometimes students will say things and it may be a microaggression and hurt another student. And it's just because of something they've heard in their house or they heard around their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They don't really understand it, you know, especially when you get into the middle school level and, you know, elementary level. They repeat what they say, but they don't necessarily understand the meaning.
Yeah.
But so when you're sitting in those circles and you're talking about things that might be hurtful to them and their culture, if somebody else said it, then it's a little different. They're learning, and it's harder when you know people to say hurtful things about them and their culture.
You're listening to What's Next Today with Charlene Rivera and Danessa Scott Warren, talking about community, advocacy, identity, and the lived experience that continues to shape our society. When we return, we'll continue this conversation and discuss how families navigate these realities and the importance of self-care and what it means to build resilience in challenging times. This is What's Next from Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Public media starts here, in our neighborhoods, our schools, our city halls, where decisions meet real life. BTPM NPR's local reporters are asking the questions that matter, listening to the people affected, and explaining what it all means for our region.
There's a lot of poor record keeping. There are records that lists that don't reconcile with other lists. There's a lot of gasoline that's being used that isn't properly accounted for. And there are a lot of people with take-home vehicles.
That's Erie County Comptroller Kevin Hardwick. He's outlining just a few of the issues his office found when conducting an audit of the county's vehicle fleet.
From paper trails to public impact, this is journalism that stays with the story and with the community it serves. Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, produces journalism with depth, care, and purpose. This is public media.
A downed tree, a broken bike or two, and hundreds of miles between Buffalo and Brooklyn. That's the journey in Rolling Through, a new video series from Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Producer Pat Kelly is biking the Empire State Trail, exploring nature, culture, and how eco-friendly travel can connect us to the places we visit.
Oh, we are getting rain soon.
Cool, we can wrap it's coming.
New episodes of Rolling Through arrive every week. Watch on the BTPM YouTube channel and BTPM Plus.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media, The Bridge. Made by music lovers and powered by listener support. Locally owned and operated. Always independent. This is public media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back to What's Next from Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm executive producer Charles Gilbert. We return to our conversation with What's Next contributor Saladin Allah as he speaks with Charlene Rivera of the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center and attorney and community advocate Danessa Scott Warren.
Now, you casually mentioned the phrase microaggression.
Yes.
Could you explain what that is? Because some of our listeners, that might be the first time they heard what microaggression is.
So microaggression will be something that someone says that could be as blatant as an actual racial slur that is used against someone, or it can be as subtle as making a stereotype suggestion or a comment about someone's race or culture. Sometimes people just say it and they make assumptions about it. You know, I've walked into a room before and in a boardroom and someone will say, oh, can I get two creams and a sugar?
What?
That would be a microaggression because they are assuming I'm there to take their coffee order. Wow. And I have said, for what I'm going to charge you hourly, I'm glad to go to Starbucks for you. But when I get back, the clock is still running to deal with your corporate crisis issue. So then they're like, I'm sorry. I said, no, you assumed that the person behind me was the attorney, not the person in the suit carrying the briefcase.
Mm.
So they happen all over the place and people don't even think about it. It happened to me after I gave birth. We're a biracial couple, and I gave birth at with twin daughters, and I went down to the hospital to see him. My husband had just gone home to check on our oldest daughter, and they couldn't find, they said, we don't see your twins here. Well, I'm looking at them, the numbers all match, and then I call a lockdown because they said, no, we're looking for two black twins. And I said, they're biracial. These Whoa. Are my twins. And they said, they're blue-eyed. No, they're not your twins. What? And so I had to call my husband back to the hospital. He walks in off the street, and they hand him two babies out of a nursery. So I just thought, like, are you serious? Yeah, so it happens. I've been in Saks Fifth Avenue after I used to sit on a committee through Governor Pataki. I walked in, met my husband there, went to change one of our daughters, and they asked me how, one of the ladies in the restroom asked me how long I've been a nursemaid for my daughter.
What?
And I said, I'm not the nursemaid, I'm her mother. And they said, no, seriously, how long have you been with the family? And I said, since I gave birth to her. What are you talking about? And she's my daughter. And she walked out, and when I came out, there was security from Saks Fifth asking me to hand the baby over so they can decide if I had taken my child. Once again, I just left a board meeting in a suit, and I was being questioned. So my husband's sitting across the cafe, and I'm trying to wave him down, and he comes over, once again, just gets up from a table, and they say, sir, is this your child? He says, yes. No, I did nothing. They hand over our twin to my Caucasian husband, and he goes, why are you questioning my wife? So he was able to validate that I am his wife, his daughter, with no ID, no nothing. It's there.
Wow.
It's there. So, and that was, our twins are now 24 years old, and that was happening then, and it happens in corporate boardrooms now.
I mean, when both of you think about these kind of incidences. I know.
I need to get myself back.
Yes.
And you're a lawyer at this time, too.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Yes. I've been a lawyer now for 30 some years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. It's going to be 33 years.
So you're processing this with a legal hat on.
Oh, it's been going on most of my career. It's been going on most of, our lives, especially as a biracial couple.
Wow.
The Walmart. We walked in a Walmart, and my husband, once again, he has paper towels, everything in a cart. They just wave him through, no receipt. I have the receipt with a bag with like a couple items in it, and I get stopped because they want to know why I don't have enough items in my bag because it doesn't match my receipt. And I said, because you allowed my Caucasian husband to roll out of the store ahead of me without checking anything. He already took the items that we've paid for. I have less items. Then you're questioning less items. You want to know where the extras are. What is wrong with you?
Oh, my God.
But, having biracial kids, we've had to teach them. Like, you, especially if you go into Walmart, don't put your hoodie on. Don't put your hands in your pocket, especially your makeup. You're going to get followed. These are things they had. And I had to have the talk with my husband so he knows when the kids are with him what he might go through. Yeah. But he never does. My husband can roll out with a large screen TV in a cart, and no one's going to question him.
Hey, that might be an advantage.
I do need a TV.
But it's just those, and he was very surprised. Like, what do you mean? Why are they questioning? He goes, no one questioned a single thing in my cart.
For those who are listening right now, this is what we mean by privilege.
This is
seriously.
It truly is. So almost, early on in the marriage, like once we're going to decide to have children here, he's going to have to know these things.
Yeah.
In case these things happen. We go to restaurants like when they're younger and they say, well, how do you want to split the check? Now, that's a family of seven sitting down with little kids. Mm. But they'll say, well, is she with her and is she with you? And I say, these two are mine. Those two are his. And we pick this one up as a dependent in the parking lot. What's wrong with you? I said, these kids are all our kids. And they're like, oh, stepkids? No. No, these are all our kids. People, they try to put you in boxes and try to figure out, as opposed to just sitting a family of seven down. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It makes me think about what you said about the talk.
Yes.
And a lot of times people don't know what having the talk is.
Yes.
You know, I had the talk when I was young.
Yeah.
I've had the talk with my 7-year-old, you know, my older daughters, you know, for them to prepare how to navigate the society
you
just
have to
confront all of these things. I'm sure that you deal with a lot of stuff too, Shar.
Yeah, I actually didn't know about the talk until high school. And that's because that's when I got my first Black teacher. And that's when they actually like set us down and be like, listen, this is what the real world looks like. Mm-hmm. This is what you need to do. And I had to give the talk to my mom, to my brother. Yeah, so
it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very real. And so, our daughters, one went to Park School and four went to Nichols. So okay, they definitely had to be prepared for the talk before starting high school.
And then so because we have been given these talks and consistently reinforced, because the further you go back, your life depended upon having that talk.
Absolutely.
If you weren't aware of where you should be or shouldn't be, you could literally lose your life behind that. Mm-hmm. What is oftentimes may have not been talked about also is the self-care. You know, because the things that we're talking about right now, I mean, we're making light of it, but this is serious and it requires some self-care. So my question to both of you is, what's some of the things that you do in order to bring some normalcy to your life or some self-care from just dealing with the kind of landscape that we're confronted with every single day? What's some of the things that you do?
Bad Bunny. No, but seriously, like just spend time out in nature for me. Like right behind my house, I have a really nice, like beautiful park that I could just sit down under a tree and just ground myself.
It ain't no racist birds over there? Or no squirrels?
No. No, thank God, no. But to me, grounding and finding myself with, well, let me reiterate that because I was just in nature and the bugs were killing me. But just sitting at a park under a tree and having a nice book or like having my little Lonnie with me. Lonnie's my puppy. Or just being with family, you know, that really grounds me and brings me back to what my mission is and what my goals are. But one thing I wanted to say real quick is that we're actually having a different type of talk, too, with everything that is happening now.
What you mean by that?
With the wannabe police agents. Recently, we saw them in places that they shouldn't be. So that's a different type of talk I had to have with my family. As to make sure that you carry your IDs with you, make sure that you have a passport carry with you. We share locations at all times, only because, you know, you never know when you're going to be discriminated against just because you're speaking Spanish.
Wow.
So that's what I wanted to do. But yeah, I ground myself.
No, it's really true.
And what about yourself?
I would say we spend time as a family when we, you know, everybody's moving different directions and the kids are in college and pre-med or in med school. And it's hard to carve out the time. But we were very intentional about where we chose to live as a biracial couple when we purchased our house like 30 some years ago. And we have really found where we are in town of Amherst and Waynesville that our kids feel comfortable. They, you know, they feel comfortable walking, taking walks. We take walks together as a family. I really have found that we do things when we can. We enjoy let off some steam at a Lasertron. We like to do escape rooms, things like that. Board game nights, just things that kind of just center us as a family and just say, okay, you know that there's some harsh things going on out in the world. And this is some space where we can talk about them because they need, we have five daughters. We just want them to be able to know there are going to be racial things. There's going to be gender things. There are going to be socioeconomic things. The world is not easy right now for young people. And we want them to know they have a safe space with me and my husband to talk about it all.
That's definitely encouraging.
Well, thank you for that, because I'm tired of being called lazy.
It is hard to be a young adult now.
No, seriously.
It really is. When we miss to say things, then it was written on a note in school. So either you shredded or you ate the note. Now your business is in social media.
Yes.
24/7 too.
24/7.
Yes. That's why we didn't give our kids social media until they were like in almost junior, senior in high school. Because I would say to them, things that you feel and you want to say, you don't want to explain one day if you're sitting in front of Senate or Congress having to actually testify on why you said what you did. And we can see from many of the adults now that have to testify and say things, they're trying to backtrack and and all these things. So we say, listen, you need to center that within yourself. You people don't need to know what you're eating. They don't need to see what's on your plate. They don't need to know where you're going. This is, you don't need to broadcast everything about your life.
Facebook is not a diary. I repeat, Facebook is not your diary. It's not your therapist. I should not be knowing your whole business, and I barely know your last name.
So do you also see like social media is kind of like the new resume for people nowadays in terms of seeing the things that they're doing and saying?
People hard on their social media. Yes. Yeah, people saying, oh, I never believed in that. And then they're liking posts and they're commenting on posts. Just because you have a feeling doesn't mean you need to put it out there, because one day you may need to defend it when you want to backtrack it. And they're young. So what they believe now, you know, early 20s, when they're in their 40s or 50s could be completely different. But someone's going to bring it up and ask, well, you posted this. So what's the deal? And now you got to answer for something that you believed when you were 20.
When you're executive
Think about
brain
when you were
function.
20 years old and the things that you said and your beliefs then. And then you hit your 40s and you're like, oh, my gosh. But now people want to hold you accountable for those things. You couldn't eat the note.
Yeah, I mean, we see that a lot with like reality stars. They want to get in a new show, and now out of the blue, there's a video of you saying the N-word or a video of you being super, super racist. And now your whole image is ruined because you were being ignorant because you wanted to post everything.
Or if you get fired, you get a GoFundMe and you get hundreds of thousands of dollars from sympathetic supporters. You know,
because they feel like he was wrong. And then you go on a post and now they got a brand new Bentley.
Stay with us. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to Juneteenth, the significance of this celebration, and the events bringing the communities together across West New York with Charlene Rivera and Danessa Scott Warren. This is What's Next from Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Trust doesn't happen by accident. It's built through careful reporting, verified facts, and respect for the audience. BTPM NPR's local journalists take the time to get it right, covering the issues shaping Western New York and Southern Ontario.
Immigration consultants like Tatiana Cabrera say they're seeing more interest in people coming to Canada, but warn there are still many hurdles to overcome.
It's not sort of a free-for-all type of an application, but I think it's still worth attempting for many people who see that they have either parent, grandparent, great-grandparent who may have been born in Canada.
UPD responded to a reported serious concern based on credible information and followed established police procedures. According to court filings from police, the students only had a photo to identify the person who made the threats.
News without spin, context without noise. This is Public Media.
What is BTPM Plus? It's an evolution of Buffalo Toronto Public Media that brings you the best of PBS, where you can watch your favorite programs live and dig into collections curated just for you. And here's the best part. When you stream BTPM Plus, you're not just watching, you're supporting your local public media station, the journalism, the arts, and the storytelling that keeps our community connected. Visit btpm.org/plus today. Stream smarter, stream local.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back to What's Next. I'm executive producer Charles Gilbert, and we're closing out today's show with What's Next contributor Saladin Allah talking to Charlene Rivera of the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center and Danessa Scott Warren, corporate lawyer, and executive director of the Niagara Organizing Alliance for Hope.
So, you know, thinking about all of these different things that are going on right now, both of you have stepped beyond just your professional role in terms of organizing public events that helps celebrate some of the history that is important for our communities to celebrate. Dinesha, you are the chair and the executive director, not only for NOAA, but you also established the Juneteenth that's going to be celebrated in your community, out in Amherst, Waynesville.
Town of Amherst had always, they said for like 4 or 5 years, had done a Juneteenth before I had come onto the Amherst Diversity Committee. Mm-hmm. But theirs was done like at the Senior Center in the afternoon. And when I joined that committee, I said, mm-hmm. well, if we're going to do it, like a Juneteenth is a festival.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not a luncheon. Mm-hmm. But to their credit, I said, I'm glad you were recognizing it, but not in the nature of what it was is meant to be celebrated. So that year, I organized one with the Amherst Diversity Committee, and we held it at Bassett Park, and it was good. So then last year, the Village of Williamsville wanted to do theirs for the very first time. So I worked with the Arts, Diversity, and Culture Committee, and I chaired the Juneteenth for them last year. And then this year, it's actually going to be a little broader. It's going to be the North Towns Juneteenth.
Wow.
Where we're including all the North Towns in it, and still going to be held at Island Park, but it's not through the village. It's NOAA, Niagara Organizing Alliance for Hope. Our advocacy organization is the host organization for the Juneteenth. And we got about 40 vendors. We have the Colored Musicians Club will be playing as well, too. We got She Drums, so it'll be interactive. People can come up and play the drums. And we have church choirs.
And you're going to have a line dancing as well, right?
Yep. Katrina McClinton out of Niagara Falls is going to be. Yeah. So bring your fans.
Yeah.
We'll be there. Absolutely.
And Katrina, she now hosts line dancing classes over at our Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center
every
other Wednesday. Yes.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
No, so she'll be there leading the crowds in that as well, too. Really excited about the number of food vendors and artisans that are coming. We got the Princess Beauty Bus will be rolling up for girls that want to get there, or anyone that wants to get their lashes or makeup done. And you'll go in. Yeah, so we have a lot of interactive. We got crafts for kids. The crafts are all free for the kids and activity. So we're pretty excited about it.
Cool. And what has been like the response that you've been receiving from the community?
Oh, it's been a great response. First of all, the vendors that came last year were like, are you doing it? Because we want to make sure we're coming back. And then they've told two friends and they've told two friends. So that's been wonderful. In the community, too, we have Canal Bank that's coming out as sponsoring us. Jeannie Vinyl, Erie County legislators working on supporting us as well, too. And she's providing the stage and the bandwagon for us as well, too. We have Zephyr Development Corporation that's coming out. Wow. Iskalo Development is stepping up to be a sponsor. So we have a lot of people that want to come out because this is about inclusion, not exclusion. Because once again, the more you learn about me and my culture, the easier it is for us to sit down at the table, have conversation, and move things forward, even if we have different political views. Because we don't have to go to racial slurs. We don't have to go to microaggressions. We can find commonality of our lived experiences. And that's one of the things we loved about doing the racial healing circles as well, too, with NOAA, is what comes out in those things is just amazing. When people are hugging and crying at the end, and you know, and people walk away with things feeling a little bit different than when they came into the circle.
Yeah. And can you tell us where is the location and what is the date and the times for this?
Yes, it's Saturday, June 20th. So we never, ever come to the date of the Buffalo or the Niagara Falls Juneteenth. So we do it on a completely different weekend. No, we never disrespect that. And it will be 12 to 5 at Island Park in Williamsville.
Okay. And that's 5565 Main Street in the village of Williamsville.
Sitting right behind Amherst Town Hall. It's actually a little bridge. You go over and it's an island over there. It's great.
Yeah. And it's free and open to the public as
Absolutely.
Well,
right? We want everybody to come, regardless, race, beliefs. Just everybody come, have a good time, listen to the music, enjoy some food, and have a great time getting to know more.
Excellent.
Once again, and I will be there.
Oh, yeah. And you, Saladin, you will be one of our guest speakers as well, too, for the event. So thank you very much for doing that. Absolutely.
Anytime. And Shar, you have a number of events that you are coordinating as well for Juneteenth in Niagara Falls. Could you share a little bit more about what you're going to be doing along with your team?
Yeah. So the first thing we have going on is the Poetry Slam with Inner City Minds.
Okay.
This is a non-competitive safe space for everybody to just get your feelings out, share your poetry, music, and get your feelings out, right? Juneteenth is a celebration, so we are celebrating Black voices.
Yeah.
This is on next Saturday, so June 13th. Mm-hmm. From 6 to 8, but we extend the 8 in case you do have more to say.
Yeah.
Then we also have for Juneteenth, we are switching things up. And instead of only offering 2 tours a day, we're going to be offering tours every hour. So from 10 to 3, just to make sure that everybody, you know, knows what Juneteenth is, what it meant. Right. And to extend the Juneteenth celebration, the 20th, we'll be hosting our annual community day for Juneteenth. Right. Because Juneteenth in Black history is not just February or just June. This is 365. It is an everyday celebration. Mm-hmm. So community day is exactly that. Just a day of music, free food, youth activities, and just community pride.
Yeah.
So that's what we got cooked up for June.
Yeah. And then also we have Tony Cohen, who's going to be in town presenting on Community Day. For those of you who are not familiar with Tony Cohen, he is a direct descendant of Patrick Sneed, who was a waiter that worked at the historic Cataract House during the time of the Underground Railroad. He's done historic walks from Maryland all the way here to Western New York, and he is currently doing his Freedom Walk 2026. I'm not sure where he's at right now. I think he might be, maybe he's in New York by now, but he's going to make his journey all the way here through Buffalo to Niagara Falls, and he's going to be on site for Community Day as well, talking about his initiative and the importance of his legacy and heritage.
Doesn't he have a special guest traveling with him, the Harriet Tubman statue?
Yes, he has the Harriet Tubman statue, which is going to be traveling along with him. So people in the various different locations where he stops are going to have an opportunity to see that beautiful statue as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So location for these events?
Ooh, 825 Depot Avenue West, located in the Amtrak station. Enter through the Amtrak, then make a right.
Okay. In terms of Juneteenth, we've been seeing an attack, and we spoke a little bit about that attack on some of the history that's being shared. And the irony of it is we are approaching 250 years of this country being in existence. And we have this attack that's going on with a lot of the things that are related to that history. Why is it important to share this history and for both of you to be involved in these initiatives around Juneteenth? Why is that even important? Because there's some people that they do not think that Juneteenth is important at all. Why do you think that it's important?
Well, I would say I had a flyer out in my house, and my sister-in-law had come in for a graduation with one of our daughters, and she asked me, Denise, why would you be involved in something like this? And I said, it's not a crime spree. It's Juneteenth. And I said, just because I celebrate Juneteenth doesn't mean I don't celebrate the 4th of July.
Mm.
Celebrating Juneteenth isn't taken away from the celebration of this 250th of the country. We live in this country. I'm proud of that. So I will be. I always celebrate Juneteenth.
Yeah.
But I'm also celebrating when my people received freedom. So one is not excluding the other. So I said to her, it's important that you should be coming and celebrating this. And I'm not taking away from 4th of July. So people, I think, need to understand.
Yeah.
Celebrating one is not saying I don't honor and respect and celebrate the other.
Yeah. And what about you, Shar?
I think that celebrating Juneteenth is important because this is not just celebration of emancipation and freedom, but it's also the celebration of people's autonomy being brought back to them. We need to remember that slavery, it was erasure of land, culture, people's just who they are as their own, right? So Juneteenth isn't just, oh, you're free, go do what you want to do, but it's this this, here's your humanity back. You know, we see you. I mean, even though we know historically what happened afterwards.
Yes.
But to me, Juneteenth means we see you as a human being that you are, right? You are free. You're at your own person. You get to celebrate yourself. You get to celebrate your community, right? And I don't think communities are celebrated enough nowadays, you know? So I think this is a good reason as to why let's go out, celebrate each other and who we become, because we've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the kind of work that both of you do is important in terms of being able to create the kind of society that we would all want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of times people sit back and complain and they don't step forward and do anything. One of the models that I live by is when something's absent, to me, that absence is the evidence of an opportunity. And the fact that both of you have always been stepping up in this capacity and being self-motivated to be change makers, I think is beautiful, it's important, and it should consistently be celebrated. So I'm thankful for both of you to be able to be here and to share some of the work that you're doing. And then I'm sure people listening to this are going to be inspired as well.
Well, I think I'm inspired by other people. That's, it makes, you know, easier to do these things because it can be a heavy lift. But when you see people, when I saw the people that came out last year and that came up to me, and the diversity, the sheer diversity of the Juneteenth in Williamsville, and the people that came and their enjoyment and saying, we can't wait to come back next year. That was my motivation. Recently, Assemblywoman Karen McMahon sent me a letter that I'm going to be recognized as a woman of distinction the the day before Juneteenth for the 146th Assembly.
Congratulations.
And I'm honored for it. I didn't expect it, but because I'm just doing, I'm a part of this community. Like I said, we moved into this community in 1996 that my husband and I moved into town Amherst and Williamsville. And we immediately immersed ourselves into the community, and the community has accepted us and we've accepted the community.
Yeah.
So this is just part of sharing who I am with the community. Like we celebrate Oktoberfest, we go to the Italian festival and the Greek festival. So, I mean, my daughters go to Dingus Day. So we celebrate all of who that they are. And so this is just another extension of mom's culture, like dad's culture. So our kids are celebrating almost all the holidays that they can grab. I said, geez. But that's important because that's another generation of acceptance and inclusion, not exclusion.
And I think it's also important to mention that this year in Buffalo, which has one of the largest Juneteenth celebrations in this entire country, is celebrating 50 years of organizing this celebration. And that is definitely something to be mentioned and honored and respected, because this community has also led other communities in terms of these opportunities to celebrate, because it's demonstrative in terms of them seeing what this celebration is actually about.
They were extremely, when I first went to them and said, I want to turn it more, and rather than it's a luncheon, I want it to be more. It was the Buffalo Juneteenth Committee were absolutely so supportive of me and helping me get this up off the ground. That's why I said I would never come anywhere near having this event anywhere near the Buffalo Juneteenth. That is iconic.
Absolutely.
Yes. We're just trying to mimic on another level. So something that's already so great, and then get it out to more people.
Absolutely. Expand it in this whole entire region.
And then people came from the Buffalo Juneteenth and came out and supported this one as we go there. So
Absolutely. So in closing, I just wanted to ask this one last question from both of you. When listeners leave the Juneteenth celebration this year, what's one of the things that you hope that they remember to carry with them?
For me, I hope that they learn to carry with them, this isn't about just today. This is about next week when the African-American boy walks into your shop, not to make an assumption if his hands are in his pocket. If the African-American girl happens to be coming in and looking at earrings at your place, that she's not there to steal them. She's there to look at them. To remember what you learned about today and carry it forth, and not make assumptions of people that you see walk in to a certain place that they can't afford to be there or that they don't belong there. This is about inclusion and belonging. And I'm hoping, and that's one thing we do with this Juneteenth, is we don't just have music and art. We have professional groups. The Erie County Bar Association is there with the Minority Bar Association. Mm. We have UB will be there as well, too. We have lawyer groups. We have medical doctors that, in fact, one of our speakers for our keynote speaker is Dr. Kimberly Wooten at Roswell Park Cancer Institute, African-American doctor of surgery of head and neck. So it's important to see us in all spaces. Mm. We will have the Black National Social Workers Association there. So I want them to see we're not just one aspect, we're all facets. Mm. So when somebody does walk up to you, just don't make an assumption about them. You just never know who you might be talking to.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree with what you said. And I want to just add on to self-pride. Mm. We see on the news everything that is happening. Right. We know historically everything that's happened to us. We know that things are not going to get better tomorrow. But if you have pride within yourself and where you come from, that would take you a long way.
So thank you. This is Saladin Allah for Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Peace.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.